Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Welcome to the Foundation Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to psycho history. I'm David.
I'm John, and this is our coverage of the Apple TV Plus original series, Foundation.
In this podcast, we're going to do a scene-by-scene breakdown of Season 2, Episode 1, In Seldon's Shadow.
Be sure to stick around to the end of the podcast for programming notes about our podcasting schedule for the rest of July.
For early access and ad-free episodes and other exclusive content, visit us at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Also, if you're enjoying our content and want to give us a leg up, leave us a review and or a rating on Apple Podcasts. Ratings and reviews help people find our podcasts, even on Terminus.
We love to respond to your questions, thoughts, and theories on air, so send us feedback for the next episode.
Send emails to empire@thelorehounds.com or head to our website and you can use our contact form or leave us a voicemail. There's a little button, you click it and you can record straight from your computer and we can include that in the next episode.
Yeah, we also have a Discord server where we have a Foundation channel. You can chat with other fans of the series, fans of science fiction generally. We do live watches for patrons. We have a lot of fun there, you know? And good time. I also, David, I love your email for the Foundation show. You surprised me with that. I chuckled, empire@thelorehounds.com. I hope people use it because it's a good little joke.
That's right. Well, and of course, you made a nice theme song. So there we go. Now we've patted each other on the back.
The teamwork makes the dream work.
That really is right. It makes the empire run or something. I don't know. Yeah. Well, poorly. We need a third if we're going to have a... if we're going to do it that way. So, John, welcome back to Season 2 of Foundation. How you feeling?
Well, I feel like I never left Season 1 because I finished it yesterday.
Oh, did you not watch it in the...
No, I didn't.
Oh, wow.
I watched like 2 episodes last year. I guess we'll talk about our histories now.
Yeah,
I watched about 2 episodes last year when it came out and not live. I caught up a little later and it just didn't grab me at first. Mm-hmm. So I didn't finish it.
Sure.
And finally, you said, let's cover it. I said, all right, you know what? It seems like an intriguing enough premise. I knew that there were COVID issues. And so I'm willing to forgive a lot for that because it was a tough time to be in film. And I'm glad that I finished the first season because honestly, it was a rewarding payoff, I thought.
Oh, good.
A
I'm glad you liked
things
it. Great.
Were surprising to me.
Yeah.
I thought that it's a show that's brilliant in the way that it tells such a huge scope story, but grounded mm-hmm. in characters that in very believable ways stick mm-hmm. around for the long haul. And in different ways, it's not like everybody's a clone. It's not like everybody's in cryo. It's all these unique circumstances. It feels like happenstance. It feels like a bunch of coincidences coming together rather than a forced, written story arc. And so I'm glad I stuck with it. I'm really excited for Season 2. So far, I like Season 2 better. Mm-hmm. And we're only one episode in. So,
right.
Yeah. How about you? What's your background on Foundation?
For the television series, I was active as it was airing. I was there weekly. I was chatting on the Bald Move Discord when we had that running and really was invested in the show. I had mixed feelings when it aired initially. I thought the rougher edges and the not so great bits outshadowed the really good bits, But then I too, like you, did a, well, I did a rewatch. I got it done just before the new season started. And I was actually more pleased than I thought I was going to be. I was bracing myself for the cringy parts to be super cringy, and they weren't really that bad. And
well, your expectations were probably lower, right?
I had lowered expectations, so yes, my experience was good. And then the good stuff was still as good as it ever was. Lee Pace, you know, I may be married to a woman, but I will tell you this, Lee Pace can rule my empire any day of the week.
Oh my God. I said on the Discord, can someone send me the empire exercise regime? Because I need it.
Yeah, seriously.
I need it.
Bro,
boy,
is
oh
fit.
Boy, Brother Day is rocking it.
I tell you what, and wait, yeah, well, we're going to get into it in a minute as Day did get into it. So yeah, I was really happy that season one exceeded my expectations, even though I'd lowered them. It still met pretty high marks. I still have the problems that I had, but they were less in comparison of the totality of the show and the work. I read the books a long time ago, and I never finished the two times I think I attempted to read it. I got ground down somewhere about of the first three books. I ground down somewhere in the middle of the third book. Okay. And I just felt like, I don't know what's going on. It didn't hold me. And I just set it down and never picked it up.
Gotcha.
So I'm generally familiar with the big ideas. I think that Goyer, I also went back and I listened to a couple of interviews with David Goyer, who was on the Bald Move podcast. And those were really illuminating and interesting conversations that he had. He did a mid-season and an end-season conversation with those guys. And that was really interesting to get his perspective on the show and how do you make a show like this. And I agree, the ability to take really huge concepts and bring them down to a scale that we can relate to and to create the structure of the empire and the genetic dynasty, that is inspired. That is just brilliant. That is not something in the book. And that's where, when we talk about adaptation versus inspiration, and we talk about, you know, did the message and the medium, you know, are there changes because of the medium that you have to do to the message, and does it target that sort of these X, Y axes? I thought on one of those points there, that was just brilliant storytelling and brilliant additive quality to this show. And it is some of the best of this show is that stuff that doesn't exist in the books.
Right.
So,
yeah. And that's really interesting to me. And I'm going to say this now about expectations is, I'm on record saying, you know, Mandalorian, put your pajamas on, enjoy it, you know, have your chocolate milk, have a great time. This is not that show.
No.
And I do have high expectations for this season.
Fair enough.
I think that that's justified because it's a show dealing with really heavy concepts, these big budget, beautiful scenes, with this very serious messaging, this very serious tone, even if there is a little humor sprinkled in. And so I will be critical where I don't think it meets the mark, but I'm hoping that this show doesn't make me want to put on my pajamas, that it really draws me in. It makes me want to think about things bigger than me.
I was watching the trailers when they came out, and those trailers made me really nervous for the show, that it was going to sink
for
down.
For season two?
Yeah, for season two.
Oh.
I felt that it was scraping bottom a little bit and a little bit too much explosion and big set piece stuff. And I think this is my tinfoil hat theory on that, is that they intentionally are making those trailers to be exciting and eye candy to get people in, to get the viewer numbers up. So my feeling is, so far what they've shown us is that there is going to be some really, like you said, good high concept stuff that should raise to a higher level of expectation.
Yeah. And you know what? Even this episode, I think, had better dialogue than season one. I thought it was much closer to a Game of Thrones kind of dialogue, where it's more of a battle of words than it is just straight up conversation. Still don't like Salver's acting. I don't like the performance of Salver Hardin It feels very like modern American, and it bothers me.
I am with you there. I like Leah Harvey a lot, and yet somehow her delivery is not, it's not matching it, especially when you compare it to Lulu Bell, and she's, there's some scenes in this episode.
But are we just Americans who can't hear our own accent and feel like we're in a different world?
It's quite possible that that's the case.
I hear a South African accent. I think that's her accent. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ooh, I'm in a different world. You know, I know it's a different accent. It's really New Zealand, but I almost think of Omega from The Bad Patch when I hear her voice. I think that this narration with the South African accent, where it's just, it just feels like I'm being transported somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I hear this very familiar accent with Salver Hardin, and I'm like, I'm not in this world anymore. Mm-hmm. And that, I think it might be a me problem, and I'm just going to say it out front.
Okay.
And I'm not going to complain about it again, because that's going to get tired.
I may point out a line or two here or there, but I'll try to maybe keep it pointed at the script and less at Leah Harvey's delivery.
Yeah. I don't think she's doing a bad job. I just don't like, I don't think it fits. I don't think the performance fits.
Interesting. Yeah. Cool. So, well, let's just slide it right into your hot takes for episode one of season two.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a great episode. It really pulled me in as I was watching it the second time. Although I had to kind of skip around because I had to get the outline done. I had things going on in my house, but as I was watching it the second time and just skipping through, I was like, wow, a lot happened in this episode.
A lot happened.
Absolutely packed.
Yeah.
Absolutely packed. And I think maybe you said it, somebody said it on the Discord, where there was such a good balance of action and dialogue, and, you know, drama.
I don't think I said that on the Discord, but I actually have that exact same note in my notes.
Okay. Somebody said it.
Okay.
And sorry for not including your comment, but yeah, it was a really good balance. It was really well paced, I should say. It was Lee paced. That's great.
Thirsty much?
I liked it. What about you?
I am very pleased. I am very pleased that we have a solid show to podcast about again.
Yeah.
It was.
I was nervous about this one.
Yeah, it was weird to do an outline, a full depth thing, and thinking about research topics and all that stuff. So it's great to be back on the mic on a proper show that deserves full attention like this. So that's exciting. I agree that the balance between the fast and slow elements in this episode were really great. As you said, it's just packed, and it's full of world building and story setup, but all of it is nestled nicely within the actions and consistent things of what a character would say in the moment to that other character.
Yeah.
None of it feels that awkward, stumbling exposition. It all feels correct in the real world, in the story world.
I think the best example of that is Brother Day walking in and talking about the eyeless assassins. Yes,
the fallen angels.
Felt so clean, that exposition. I was like, that is clean. So good job to the writers on that.
My scene was when Day and Dusk were talking as the queen is arriving.
Okay. And yeah, that was good too.
Yeah. And they were talking about a bunch of stuff there, and that I was like, wow, this is excellent world building. It feels so natural. So visually stunning, as it's worth, every penny that they're putting into the VFX. There is the iffy stuff on Synax, inside the Prime Radiant. We can talk about it a little bit later.
I love those scenes inside the Prime Radiant, so I'll fight you on that one.
I'm happy with the story of what's going on inside the Prime Radiant, but from a technical aspect, I could see where they put the lights. I could see the guy in the background with the sliders moving the lights up and down, and it just felt very...
Well, that
black
sounds like
box
a me problem.
Theater. It is a me problem, and I will own that. No problem at all. That said, none of those things took me out of the story, and I was pretty stoked to be back in this world and ready to go. I think, what's our coverage plans here overall? We're just going to do full coverage. Break breaks. Yeah.
This is very exciting. We're back. Yeah. Baby, we're back.
And so we've got feedback. We definitely need your feedback, and we need conversations on the Discord. I wanted to get into a little bit of Asimov and the Foundation book series, but I think we'll drop that in the next episode.
That sounds good.
Just to give it some context and some understanding of where in the world.
Maybe I'll read the trilogy by the next episode. I'm just kidding.
You're crazy like that. You'll do it. And then you'll get in a Wheel of Time complete reread before September 1st.
I'm on book 11 right now.
See, I knew it.
I've always got one going.
So I think it'd be nice to have some of the context for the story from the book and about who Isaac Asimov was, because he's a huge figure in science fiction literature. Yeah. And yeah, other than that, I think we're ready to get into our episode breakdown, if you're good.
Let's do it.
Okay. Another thing I want to do on these, I found a really cool site that has a TV show transcript, so I'll be able to collect these up quite easily. Nice. I want to read Gail's monologues at the start of our scene breakdowns. Because a lot of times in her monologues, her voiceovers, there's interesting stuff. And contextual stuff that sets up the episode. So
go for it, but you have to do the accent.
I don't think I can do that. There's an old saying.
All right.
That sounded like a bad Mel Gibson accent.
I know, that wasn't good.
I think you were watching Mad Max, the original Mad Max many times.
Probably.
There's an old saying, any man can be a success, but it takes a madman to be great. As waters rise, territories shrink. That's what happened on Cinex, and that's what happened with Empire. Day by day, decade by decade, the first foundation nibbled away planets from edges of empire, and empire steadily contracted. It has been 173 years since the foundation has been exiled to Terminus, and just like Cinex, the dark waters were now rising everywhere. The foundation had flourished, but a flourishing foundation posed a threat. How long would it be before empire thrashed like a drowning man? Not long at all, as it turns out. Harry Seldon was always a little adrift, if you ask me. He was aware of the rising seas from an early age, before he knew which questions were too crazy to ask, and when his thoughts led him to strange new conclusions, he didn't reject them.
All right, I got to add something here, because I didn't get to cover season one, so now I got to add all my comments here. I love in the world building here how they call the Empire, Empire. And they call the Emperor Empire. It's all synonymous with the word. There is no concept of empire outside the Empire.
Right.
Which is super great exposition, because you don't have to say anything, but you're telling me how completely they have ruled over these people for a millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Millennium.
And how the political structure is embodied in the man, and the man embodies the political structure. That's it. There is no difference.
The man is the institution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is
very
amazing.
Cool. Yeah. Very, very cool.
I think when reading these monologues, I may break them up again next time so that they fit into the place in the show. But there's always interesting things. I really remember that from season one, was that Gail's monologues always brought me extra insights and brought me extra context. So,
yeah.
All right. So we got a 50-minute story-ish, and I guess the intro has changed a little bit, but I think I will look at that a little bit closer in the next coming episodes to see what the exact changes are. But then we open on a black and white scene of Harry Seldon ranting and raving. At the end, he gets pulled or sucked backwards out of his black box stage prison thing.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I loved
it.
I loved the scene. I see your notes here, Rand, not liking it. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. The minute he was thrashing, I was so like, Jared Harris is back. We got him. He's going for it. He's pulling out all the stops.
The thing for me is it just felt, there's something about the visual look that's very clean, and it feels very black box theater. It felt like something out of Lear, about, you know, somebody's.
Well, he is in a digital artificial environment.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
You know, like that's the point. Yeah. Is it supposed to be clean and empty? And
again, I just feel, I can feel the lighting equipment around him, and I can't separate that. It doesn't look ephemeral and ethereal to me.
Okay.
That said, it's fine. Anyway, I really liked that he was raving at both Gail and himself.
Yes. Yes, because I think Harry is, you know, he's a madman, as she points out in the intro, which I love that line, too. You know, it takes a madman to be great.
Yeah.
And great segue into him being a madman.
Exactly. Perfect.
I think that's when that line happens. And he gets that he's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. I think that Harry Seldon knows that he is both the problem and the solution. Mm-hmm. And that is a struggle internally that he has, is how much control do I take?
Right.
How much do I give to other people? And who do I give that control to?
Which all goes into the even a crisis even before they get to Terminus, which is how does he manage his ascension amongst all the people into a messiah-like figure?
Right.
And that it doesn't work that he's still physically among them. He needs to remove himself physically from that relationship.
Right. Well, and I guess he had an illness as well. We find out at some point in season one.
Yeah, we do. And I tried to look that up today, actually, and I couldn't find it. So if there's any astute
probably a fake listeners out show there, thing.
Probably.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's a foundation-y thing.
Couple of lines that I loved from this ranting and raving. Gods made wine to compensate for those who cannot afford revenge.
I like that.
Just drown yourself in your sorrows if you can't afford to actually exact revenge.
Wine is cheap sometimes.
That's right. And then the other line was, the gods made knives to satisfy those who can't digest your grandest plan. So like, murder the people that don't understand your your
genius.
Yeah,
that's not great, huh?
No, it's really madness.
But who did he use a knife on? Himself.
He himself, exactly.
So can he not digest his grandest plan?
I think that's what's going on in the scene, right? Part of what's going on in the scene, what we were talking about, is that when he's ranting and raving, sure, he's pissed off at Gale, but he's dealing with his own sense of self.
He's a weird dude.
He's a weird dude. And as Gale says, any man can be excess, but it takes a madman to be great. So,
exactly.
All right. We shift to Synax, and the last refuge of the rising floodwaters, where Gale and Salvor pick up from where almost exactly where we left them off at season one. They establish their genetic relationship, and we learn that Salvor is now older than Gale.
Ah, yes. So, I mean, I think that was pretty clear last season, too. You know, she's a little older than Gale. This is a strange situation, and we didn't really get to see much of it last season. I do enjoy that they don't immediately get into this beautiful relationship. It's not a Paul Simon song. You know, it's not a mother and child reunion. It's something weirder. Right. You have a mother who's older than her daughter, who never met her, and she is just not knowing what to do with herself. She was not prepared to have a child. She was not asking for this.
But she was prepared to have it with Raish.
Sure.
An entirely different set of circumstances.
Right. And also, she is now in a crisis of identity herself, where she's lost everyone she knows.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, she's finding out that she actually has a family member, a direct descendant.
Right.
It's a hard thing to go through. I feel for Gale.
And the interesting thing about Salvor is that she has Gale's memories as these visions.
Yeah.
So she's able to establish or to create a fantasy of what this relationship might be like, where Gale has absolutely no preparation for this at all and has no, whereas Salvor is seeking the connection and wanting it and identified it.
Right.
For Gale, it's like you said, it's just not at all ever anything that she thought of.
Right. Yeah. It's Gale makes a great point of, you know, I didn't have time to prepare for this, and that's not in this scene, but I think that line sort of frames this whole episode.
All right, we shift scenes and we see a new and improved Trantor with a set of three orbital rings. And then we get quite an opening scene with Brother Day and Demerzel in bed. Brother Day instructs Demerzel to just be herself. So this right away, I was I until they actually showed Jem Erzel's face, I was like, oh, okay, well, Day's just, you know, having a thing. And then, oh, wait a minute. Oh, this is weird. And in that moment, I started to learn that this Brother Day is not any of the Brother Days that we knew before. Instantly, right. Their story building, even without a lot of dialogue, just in the physicality of what's going on.
Yeah. Lee Pace, just amazing job playing different personalities of the same character. It's so weird, right? Because it's somebody who had the same upbringing each time, the same DNA, but just grew into a different person based on circumstances and experiences. And he nails it. He really nails the differences. The first Brother Day is arrogant. The second Brother Day is sort of unsure of himself. And
right, a little boy, still a little boy. End of it. Yeah.
Right. And then this Brother Day is very, this Brother Day is closer to the Brother Dawn from the end of last season, where he's like, wait, maybe we should break free from these cycles and go pee in love and explore a little bit. And it's interesting that they reversed Brother Day and Dawn in their opinions here. Because last season you had Brother Dawn trying to get them to loosen up the rules. Now you have Brother Day changing the rules. And Brother Dawn is like, no, man, we are the Empire. We can't be fraternizing with the normies. And that's one of the best pieces of writing here.
To the point, this Brother Day, to the point, is different. And it comes up later, but he actually is wearing earrings later on.
Oh, I didn't notice
the episode.
That.
Yeah. So right away, they're doing all of this great story building, and the actor delivery really gives us a sense that this is a radically different person in the form of Day. So I totally agree. All right.
Great stuff.
Just then, assassins enter the chamber and we get a righteous fight scene with a naked Lee Pace. Day takes some grievous wounds. His personal aura doesn't seem to be working. Demerzel saves him and they finish off the assassins. What did you think of this fight scene?
You know, my wife started watching Foundation with me in season one and fell off of it around the time I did and never went back. And I was trying to pitch her on season two and she wasn't really into it. And I said, well, Lee Pace has a naked fight scene. And she looked up. She went, oh, maybe I will watch it with you.
Brilliant.
And
love it.
Really, really great scene. I loved the different ways he approached them. All the fighting felt really unique. It felt like he was really, first of all, it felt like he was fighting for his life, right? It didn't feel like he was overpowered fighting them. It just felt like he was competent in fighting, which is, I think, makes sense. You know, it seems like these guys have training. And
he had nothing. He had no weapons, no tools, no armor, nothing to rely on except his brute physical force.
Right. And I like that he would have died if he didn't have the secret weapon of a secret robot, because nobody knows that Demerzel's a robot except the Empire. So, I mean, that really saved him, is having that secret.
Yeah. And to be betting her at the same time that this happened. Yeah. That's, you know, and he makes that
point. I feel like she's mostly around later. Anyway.
Yeah. Still, did the do you know if I said Dread Pirate Roberts?
Oh, I love. I've been twice. I've been the Dread Pirate Roberts for Halloween with my wife.
Oh, brilliant,
Princess Buttercup.
Brilliant. Okay, these blind angels, just they looked for whatever reason, their head wraps and their coloring. I just kept thinking he was fighting the Dread Pirate Roberts every time I saw them in the frame.
So are they only mostly dead after the scene?
Mostly dead. Exactly. Mostly I don't dead. Think that means what you mean. You think it means. I gather that it was Goyer set this up and then kind of laid a trap for Lee Pace. And then Lee Pace came and said, well, I think I should do this naked. And Goyer was like, yeah, let's do it.
and you know, this is not a show with full nudity. So it's more for comedy than anything.
Which is brilliant. And there's some other comic scenes coming up. So the fact that he trained this hard and, like you said, you learned all these different fighting styles, you know, unarmed defense against a knife, just straight hand-to-hand combat, gun combat. That was all so good.
Yeah.
And it really looked at some points, even though he was fighting for his life, there seemed to be a couple of moments where he was really relishing the combat and the action and the stakes involved, you know?
Well, you think it's like one of the first times this guy has been alive in his life, right? He can actually be killed. He's vulnerable. Neither of those things are usually true.
Right.
And that's interesting for a character like this who is looking for a thrill. He is looking to change things up from all the other Cleons. Is now exactly. He wants to get married and have children. And he's having sex with his, I don't want to call her his mommy friend.
Major Doma.
It's not great. It's not great. I liked Brother Dusk later going, oh, why is it bad? Well, she changed her diapers. So that's weird.
Yeah. It's just weird, dude.
Yep.
I think this scene too also set a tone for me for this season, which is that I feel we're going to get a nice, heady balance of concept, of character relationships, cool sci-fi tech, and raw action. And this scene really brought all of that around because we have these two characters, you know, engaging and talking, and he's saying like, don't use a fake voice, use your normal robot voice, right? You know, so that's that tells you a lot about characters. And then there's cool sci-fi tech, her head being cleaved on, and the stuff that we learn about her, and then just some awesome action, just really visceral, powerful.
It was just ass fun.
Kicking. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You can have some fun times.
So it was a great balance.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. A half-headed Demerzel carries Brother Day to the clinic and tosses him into a med pool of some kind and gives the doctors the bullet on Day's condition and stabilizes him with an injection. This was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that she's carrying him. Yeah. That like a baby.
No head or half a head.
Half a head.
And and she's like, give me the thing. I'll do it.
Yeah.
You guys are too slow. All right. I'm going to go handle myself now that he's taken care of. And they just have this Bacta tank ready for him.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I get,
well,
does he
you
get
know,
injured a lot?
I mean, the president of the U.S. drives around with, you know, a full paramedic team and an ambulance and all that good stuff. So
fair enough.
You know, this is the Empire. I mean, they could always decant another one, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You got backups. Yeah. You got backups on backups.
That's right. So interesting that we learn that Demerzel's consciousness is distributed and not localized in her head. She says that
is interesting.
At some point. Yeah. I freezed or I checked the closed captioning and the molecular blade delivered a nanotoxin. So that's why it was so serious and why they needed to, you know, stabilize him. So more cool sci-fi tech stuff in there.
Right. And so the most interesting thing to me about the fight is that his shield wasn't working. His aura wasn't working.
Yes. Yes.
Why and how?
Yes.
And we know that Demerzel had some reservations about working for Empire after this whole deal with her religion last season. Is she involved with it? Is she using this sexual relationship to her advantage to sort of bring down Empire? Mm-hmm. And one might ask themselves if her code is to be loyal to Cleon and all the Cleons as they get further away genetically from the original Cleon, will she still be bound to follow them or will she have more free will?
That's a really good point because at some point, well, she even in season one snaps the neck of the brother Dawn.
Right. And that was not because that was not really Cleon. Right?
Yeah, exactly. She at some she made some estimation of saying, OK, your genetic code is now further enough away that you're not actually within my programming scope.
Right.
That's a really interesting point.
I'm worried about what's going to happen to Empire because. Mm-hmm. Well, they are largely villains. They are also entertaining to watch.
Right.
And I don't want them to go away just yet.
We're not to the scene yet, but when she comes in to interrupt the ceremony of the betrothed to be coming in, and Day challenges her about protocol. She's like, nah, dude, she's nobody to me. Right. I'm talking to you and yeah. You alone. You are my programming.
Right. Exactly. But is he? Is he? That's the question.
Yes. Well, and there's a question. We'll get to it. But we should probably take a quick break. And then when we get back, we can talk about the Prime Radiant. And we're back. Okay, so a strange new space opens up. This is a really big scene, so there's a lot to pack in here. And we find Harry Seldon in a strange space that we later learn is actually inside the Prime Radiant. He feels his way around, and then we flash back to his childhood on Helicon, where a young Harry Seldon is experimenting with shapes and shadows, and then is abused by his father for taking a page out of a book. Seldon starts to work out the physics of where he is and then begins to explore. He then meets an apparition of Yana, his former life mate, but then surmises that she's not who she appears to be. The apparition claims to be real and starts to goad him into thinking mathematically, as we later learn, as a way to heal his consciousness. So, John, you like what's going on inside the Prime Radiant?
I do. I was a little bored at some points with his discussions with Yana, Kale, whoever okay. it is, the Prime Radiant, I guess. But at a certain point, I did enjoy this idea that it was everybody who worked on the Prime Radiant, on the math of the Prime Radiant, left their mark on it. And my question is, did Gail leave anything on it? Because she was saying it's incomplete. Mm-hmm. Somehow it got complete. Who finished it? Or mm-hmm. did the Prime Radiant finish itself? Because mm-hmm. it seemed like the Prime Radiant kind of suggested that at a certain point. Maybe I'm the finished product, but I don't know. I feel like there was something missing and somebody did it. Who did it?
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I got the sense that later on, the Prime Radiant was talking about how it came around to its own consciousness.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that it kind of suggested that I keep saying it because Mrs. Davis in Mrs. Davis, it always, every time somebody called Mrs. Davis, the nun would go it, right. It's an it.
It's an it. Yes. Yeah. It's biologically. Yeah, yeah. No matter what how it's presenting itself.
Right. So, right. But anyway, yeah. So the Prime Radiant, I think suggests that she completed herself. It completed itself, but I don't know. I don't know if that's possible. Why did it take 138 years for it to complete itself?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Good question. Good. These are all good questions. I thought that this scene went on a little too long with him moving around. Like, whoa, I'm in this weird null space thing and I'm trying to navigate. That said, it was cool. The camera work was great. The set design was great. You could see where Jared Harris was having to physically change. You know, I'm sure I think they must have had a rotating set because he had to change his center of gravity as it's coming around and walking over those difficult things. It did run a little long, but it's fine. It's okay.
Okay.
So
I didn't think it went too long. I enjoyed the length.
So in the flashback, when we see his mother and his father, did you see what his father was doing? He was using that sand hologram technology, and he had a series of dinosaur-like creatures up in front of him. So that's another. I'm keeping a list of open questions, and you know, we'll revisit those episode to episode. And so I was like, what is that about? They were very specific. And were very presented very clearly. It wasn't like he was just looking into a book or scribbling on a paper. He was doing something very specific there. So I didn't know what that was about.
Yeah, who knows? Is he looking at human history with the dinosaurs, or is he sort of logging things that are on different planets that humans have explored?
Yeah, and they're on this planet called Helicon, which is very remote and hard to get to because of its environs. So I think we're going to go back to Helicon though, because
They talked
about the second foundation, establishing the second foundation, which is a big part of the
book. And I don't think Harry is going to let Gale steer after this. So I think we're going to Helicon indeed.
Right. They need to have a little bit of a reckoning.
Yeah.
All right. As we zoom out from the Prime Radiant, we see Gale, who is having a nightmare, and we get some flashes of a silhouetted figure in a fiery scene. Gale wakes in a panic and then dives into the water, thinking that Salvor needs rescuing or something. Salvor returns with breakfast. They discuss the Prime Radiant and Salvor's truth sense.
Yeah, there's a line, and I'm not sure if it's this scene or later, but where Salvor, grasping for anything to be the same, goes, "Oh, I see the past and you see the future, so we have something in common." And Gale does not pick up on the hint and just goes, "Well, that's not really the same." And she goes, "Yeah, I guess not. All right. All right." Yeah, I feel for Salvor. I feel for
an awkward thing there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if Gale has future visions and Salvor has flashbacks, I think they are the Kwisatz Haderach. What?
The yeah,
that's a Dune thing.
Yeah.
It's a Dune reference. And there's a whole bunch of stuff related to Dune and Paul Atreides about being able to see into the future and the Bene Gesserit in the past. So there's a whole bunch of interconnectivity between these two big story worlds. And I thought it was they're touching on something that's very interesting here, which is, you know, what does it mean to know the future and what does it mean to know the past? And then how does that affect your actions in the present?
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I guess psychohistory, the whole point of it is using the past to tell the future.
Yes.
Is it the same? That's the question.
Statistically, right? It's a mathematical probability statistics. I'm sure if we have any mathematical listeners out there, that would be some interesting feedback.
We got to get an expert in here, a statistician.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting stuff, and I think we need to keep an eye on it more, because Goyer's not a kind of showrunner that's not going to be doing this. If he's putting, you know, he's giving Gale future visions and Salvor past visions, and then he brings them together, there's something going on here. There's a reason. There are these two halves of the same coin, the coin that Salvor keeps.
Nice work there, guy.
Thank you. I also want to put a pin in the flash forwards that Gale is having, this silhouetted figure in a fiery scene. What's that pointing to? Obviously that's yet to come.
Yeah. Maybe it's Selden being mischievous again.
Could be.
I want to say something here too. When we're in science fiction, let's stop slightly changing the spelling of English names and pretending like it's a new thing. Harry, H-A-R-I, Gale, G-A-A-L. It's like, oh man, just use the name. If you're going to use it, use the name or make up your own name, but don't do both. You can't do both.
All right, old man John.
There you go.
Lots of shots in this conversation where the Prime Radiant is in the frame. So there's a lot of low angle stuff where Salvor may be behind and the Prime Radiant's up in front, or they switch and they're keeping the Prime Radiant in view in this conversation the whole time. So interesting stuff.
Yeah.
All right. On Terminus, the vault awakens, leading to a debate amongst the Foundationers about their readiness for war. However, Selden never appears.
What a withholding guy. Is he there, though? That's the question, I guess.
Yes. I mean,
did he get beamed up, Scotty?
Is he? Well, it's interesting because in this, the portrayal of Selden in the vault, I'll just say, is different than the books. And in this one, it does feel like his consciousness are there. And I think Salvor even says in this conversation, wait, there's two Harrys?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, no, so, I think he was there the first time. My question is he still there?
Yes, I think he's still there. I think he's on ice. No. Okay. I think he's there. Okay. I think there's a version of him there.
Yeah. And Selden seemed a lot more sane coming from the vault.
That's a good point.
Than he did from the ship and now the Prime Radiant.
Right. That's a good point.
for some reason, that version of Seldon is insane. And my question is, are we going to get to a point where there's two Seldons actively working against each other?
Ooh, that's interesting. I like that. I like that.
Give me all the Jared Harris you got.
That's right. Throw them at us, every version you can. I mean, you're throwing Lee Pace at us.
Exactly.
Did you notice the Invictus in orbit as we came in on this shot of Terminus?
I did not, but I believe you.
Yeah, it was just sitting there in orbit. All the rings were aligned. And then as we came in and flew over the city, there were lots of Thespian-style ships on the ground.
Okay.
So they have integrated the Anacreon and Thespian technologies into their you know, planet, into their cultural life. The current warden, so he mentions that it's been 138 years since the last crisis. So that versus what, 178 was a number that was thrown around before. I'm not sure exactly how those line up, but I'm going to trust the showrunners that they actually brought in some, you know, theoretical physicist, mathematician, statistical, flux capacitor experts.
Yeah.
So that these numbers are accurate. But this is, Warden Jaeger Fount. So here you go. There's a nice science fiction name for you. Played by Holt McClarney, who you might recognize from Fight Club. I think that's his most recognizable role.
Okay. I've never seen Fight Club, so maybe that'll go in old man movies. Whoa. Does it count as an old man movie?
No, it counts more as like a Millennial Madness movie, I think.
Yeah, I missed it. I don't know what it was. I just missed it.
Happens. It happens. It's an interesting film. It's definitely worth a viewage. The thing I'll notice about the new warden, though, is that he's very well equipped and very, very well armed. He does not seem to be a settler scratching out, you know, a rough existence. Like it seems like they've really raised their game.
Yeah, this is like a city now, not just a village. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And in a city, there's even a building over some hills that we can see. So, yeah, this is significant. Did you notice the director seemed to have a bit of a smile on his face when he says war with the Empire? Like he's been.
Yeah, somebody's thirsty.
Yeah.
He's thirsty for war. And I do enjoy that not everybody is like, yeah, let's go to war. But also some people are. I mean, that's a reflection of our own society, right? Like some people are more hawkish than others.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the last thing that was interesting about the scene was the religious trappings that we saw around the vault. There was a kind of little foyer-like structure made, and there were candles lighting the path. And then if you looked around, there were people in red robes sitting on the ground facing the vault as if they're in prayer or in meditation.
They've got their Messiah.
The cult of Harry Seldon is really making its, you know, has made over the a century plus has developed and made a lot of inroads. I think
you got plenty of Jared Harris roles to pray to, you know, you have King George and you got the scientist from Chernobyl. You got, you got everybody.
Yeah.
Jared Harris. I mean,
when was your first Jared Harris experience?
Probably Chernobyl.
Really?
Yeah. I think pretty late.
I picked him up in Mad Men. He was the guy. He brought him. They brought him in later in the later seasons. And
I only watched part of season one of Mad Men, and I did not watch a lot. You got to remember, I'm younger than you. I was probably in like middle school when it started. So
that's true.
Fair it was point. Not a thing that I would have been watching.
Right. It was really one of the markers too of the golden age, the beginning of the golden age of television stuff.
Yeah.
All right. In Seldon's mind prison, he uses the rhythms of Yana's voice to determine that she's actually Kale, whose math he used to make the Prime Radiant. This also reveals that his consciousness is in the Prime Radiant.
Yeah. I do like him being trapped in the Prime Radiant, partially because it makes him more mobile than he was last season. He's not trapped on a ship. He is in something that can move. The question is, how does he get moved? Because he's probably tied to this object. He's not a physical being anymore. Can he design something that can he can he like take over a robot to do it or something like that? Can he mind control Gale? Who knows? Who knows what he could do? Because he's Harry freaking Seldon, and he could do anything he wants. This whole prison within his own work is really interesting to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
He created his own tomb, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. And we were talking in the Earthsea book series that we're doing with Marilyn Arpaquila. We were just reading The Furthest Shore, and one of the quotes from there is about how when you make choices, you become bound to those choices and the results of those choices. And the further you make, the further you go down that, the more you're bound to it. And so here he is. He's ultimately bound by his creation. That's a really cool point.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah, he is. And with the person he was ready to throw away, right? By the person he was ready to throw away, like Gail, you have a line here. Gail, my tormentor.
Yes.
What a great line, first of all. Did you ever watch Schitt's Creek?
Just a few episodes from season one.
There's an episode where Moira, which is Catherine O'Hara, which is excellent, excellent performance. She starts to read reviews online about herself. And she goes, my tormentors, and just a very, very whiny voice. And I'm just thinking about that as I hear Jared Harris.
Because tormentor is a description of somebody who's doing something very intentionally to you. So
I like Gail the Tormentor. I like that.
All right. Anapestic tetrameter. I actually looked it up on Wikipedia. You can look it up too. But the one quote that caught my eye is that it's used in a lot of comedic poetry.
Okay.
And specifically the majority of Dr. Seuss's poems, often highly regular, as the regularity emphasizes the breezy melodic feel of the meter, though the initial unstressed beat of a line may often be omitted. So it's real. And I read a lot of Dr. Seuss in the last few years, so I must know.
Anapestic. I just did the Cat in the Hat yesterday.
Yeah, there you go.
It's all over the place.
That's right. I need to track down this Ublek book.
You gotta. Marilyn now approves too.
Yeah.
I told you, well, I didn't make it up. It's not a recent thing.
No.
I don't know how there could be a recent Dr. Seuss book anyway. The guy's been dead a long time.
They've licensed him out. We have one that's called Hark a Shark that our daughter really likes.
Somebody else is writing the book under the Dr. Seuss name?
Yeah, they license it out.
Oh, I don't like that.
No, it doesn't, you know. No.
Don't do that.
Yeah, no, they have. There's a huge library. They have hundreds of them
there. Right in.
So, all right. Back on Synax, Gail reveals she's trapped Selden in the Prime Radiant and defends her decisions to Salvor, who pleads with Gail to teach her how to use the Radiant. Gail demonstrates the activation and then shows Salvor that they're approaching the second crisis as humanity has veered off course. She tells Salvor if they reach the third crisis, there's going to be potentially an infinite number of crises yet ahead.
A lot of crises, a lot of stuff going on here. A lot of tongue twisters.
This was a very MCU moment here with timelines, Avengers, and you know, all of that. So.
Okay, here's my question to you, though.
Yeah.
Humanity has veered off course largely after the actions of Harry Seldon. Did humanity ever have a huge crisis in its future if Seldon hadn't interfered with the Empire?
I'll take issue with there. What happened was that Gail's prescience screwed up the timeline. Her abilities are unaccounted for within the statistical model of humanity. And so she showed up when Reich was murdering his father, his adopted father or what have you.
Right.
And she was supposed to be on Terminus solving the first crises.
Right.
So that's why they're veered off. So even though they successfully navigated the first crisis, they're off course because there's a person who has skills that are unaccounted for that is out of position from where they should be.
So, but my question to you is then why are there no crises on the second timeline, on the on-track timeline? Was there ever a crisis coming?
Yes, there are multiple crises and they're all plot.
It was real. So he wasn't lying about crises.
No, right. Coming. Yeah. Yeah. So the second crises, there should be crises on that other branch. Maybe they just kept it visually simple, right? So
you know,
maybe that's, let's hold it to that. And then the idea was you solve the first crisis, and at every crisis there are multiple potential, you could screw up the crisis and then veer off course.
Okay.
And then as Gale explains, you have a certain amount of time to get it back into the right direction.
Okay. So, All right.
Yeah.
I'll stop taking issue with it then.
Yeah. I'm sure they have these tracked out. I'm sure they bought a caseload of red yarn and have that all over the
right. Yeah. They've got the Charlie Day thing going on.
Exactly. But I do like that they are showing us the flow, even though it's very, MCUE and red and blue colors, very simplistic. I think that's what we need to do with a big concept here. So again, we're going to bring it down to the mundane.
I would say it has a unique flavor of visual effect. Foundation has this particle-like effect.
Yep.
That is very cool and feels very unique to the show.
Yep.
And yeah, also and I just want to shout out Bear McCreary is the composer for the show. Also mm-hmm. Rings of Power. And does a great job in both.
He does. I listened to the interviews with Goyer. They spent, I think he said, like a couple hundred hours on season one on getting the music. Because there's so much music in the background of all of these scenes. So,
I mean, totally. The theme itself, like before I even needed to, I just wanted to make a theme because I just loved the theme song.
Nice.
Thought it was so beautiful and very so, cool. Moving.
Right. Oh, well, you're inspired. That's great.
I was inspired. Thanks, Bear.
The idea of Harry Seldon in a thumb drive, though, kind of makes me laugh. The indignity of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guy did try to make himself immortal. Here's another question I got for you. Is this a solution for Empire? Can we just stop with the stupid clones and just be on a hard drive and give some orders every now and then?
That's interesting. I think you need a leader. You need that physical embodiment.
Okay.
People need to orient.
Seldon doesn't think so.
Well, but Seldon's created a godhead, if you will, that inspires people, but he puts the onus onto the people to solve the answers for themselves, to do innovative thinking within a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Kleonic dynasty is trying to hold a kind of a stasis to keep things moving and well contained in a direction. Whereas even though Seldon's plan, it's a predictive model. He's not controlling the future. He's just showing if we don't do this, then the result is going to be that.
Yeah.
And the result is, a very long period of darkness. So what's happening, though, is when people are solving the crises, they are doing their own thinking and being stressed and challenged in the moment. And mm-hmm. then he's predicting that they're going to solve the crisis based on statistical probability, right?
Okay.
Psycho history. So
I buy it.
Okay. All right, back on Trantor, Brother Day is painfully healed. This was a very funny scene. And throws accusations at everyone in between screams. His attackers are revealed to be blind angels without eyes. Day has the investigator killed and orders interrogation of the Shades. Day and Dawn discuss the fear of dying. Day feels like a singular soul and wants children, but Dawn counsels him that children are what will make him mortal. Day then orders an independent neural audit of his brothers. In Demerzel's quarters, Day asks whether their bedroom activities have been indecent, and she reassures him before reassembling her head.
First of all, that effect was really cool when she was reassembling her head.
It was like a stream of nanostring or something.
Visuals are unmatched in the show in science fiction, I would say.
Yeah.
So this scene, like you said, was really funny. Really, really funny. Him throwing out accusations at everyone. Everyone's the problem because he's in pain and he's just going to tell everyone that they are the problem. This idea of him doing a neural audit. Every time I think the show is out of ideas, it's got a new one. They can comb through your memories, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that Dawn or Dusk had anything to do with this attack?
It's you know, they're throwing out that. They're throwing out Demerzel. They're throwing out the, remind me of the queen here, Queen Sereth.
Sereth, yeah.
Yeah. And then just unknown malcontents in the world. So I don't think I've got enough evidence to make a hypothesis yet. There's all lots right. of interesting suspects, but I'm not ready to put any internet points down.
All right. We'll get you to the end of the Agatha Christie novel by the end of the season.
Utter the word rest, John, and you die.
That was pretty good too.
Yeah.
He had a lot of great lines, and as we've been saying this whole time, very different Day.
Totally
very different. Different Brother Day. Great job, Lee Pace. He's unhinged in a way that none of the other Brother Days have been.
This Brother Day really makes me nervous too, when he calls in Brother Dawn to give him a sort of hug and a kiss. Yeah. And then, you know, he does it with that menacing lovingness, like, oh yeah, come in, let's hug it out. Yeah.
It's like your uncle in the mob.
Oh man, it's scary. It is scary.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the you know, somebody get me a robe so my manhood isn't flapping around. And then the way that they turn the camera angles, there's somebody in the way of his groin area, and then he turns around and he sort of winks at Dawn in that funny way. Perfect. Brilliant.
Silly.
Dark sector training, psycho encrypted. Those are some things that I hope that we're going to learn a little bit more about. They sound very science fiction.
It might just be word salad to make it sound cool, that would be fine with me too. If I never find out what those two things are, then whatever. Psycho encrypted, I think that's pretty straightforward. Is, you know, you can't get into their memories.
Right. Yeah.
Psychological. You can't get into their memories because they're encrypted within their brain.
The little finger twist when he assassinates the Shadow Master. That was a great callback to season one.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That was a really terrifying scene in season one, too, when he is having that conversation with the groundskeeper.
Yeah.
You remember that with
I do now. Yeah. I know what you're talking about now, is when he lists all her descendants and friends. Yeah, that was awful. That was really the worst thing that Brother Day did.
And to keep her alive, you know, in that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Terrifying.
A lot of cruelty there.
Yeah. All right. Day's bride-to-be arrives on Trantor. And as they await her entrance, Dusk scolds Day about bedding Demerzel, leading Day to throw suspicion on Dusk. We learn that the clones are drifting further from their genetic origin, and Day insists that it is time for a change.
Great exposition here. We're drifting further from our genetic origin. We're not the same as the original Cleon. Great, great, great point here, because this had me thinking about, like I said before, is Demerzel going to remain loyal to defective clones?
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought of that until you started bringing it up. So it's going to be, because she's dangerous.
She is dangerous. You saw how she just took that guy down. She can fight for her life.
And she'll snap a brother's neck without a second thought.
Right. And we know that, you know, she's a robot, and there was a robot war that we know nothing about.
Yes.
And yeah, there's a lot. I think I read on the Wikipedia, there's like a series on the robot wars in Asimov, right?
There is.
And
yeah. That's a huge thing.
It's a related.
Yep.
This is basically a sequel to that.
Goyer has, it's not a sequel in as much as they weren't written as sequels, to my understanding.
Okay.
Don't at me if I'm wrong. I mean, well, write in and correct me if I'm wrong, but be nice about it. But Goyer has confirmed that these are the same universes in his storytelling. Right. And I believe Asimov did connect the worlds in his books, but they were not necessarily books that were written intentionally as continuations of each other.
All right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But so we know that she can fight. We know that the robots can fight very well.
Very well. And that they were, she says to Dusk, I believe in season one, that I think Dusk says something to her about, oh, you know, being the last of your kind. And she reminds him that it was your kind that, basically extirpated my kind.
Yeah. So, and that makes sense why I don't think we've seen any like servant robots or anything around, right?
No, she's the only one in the world.
There's machines, but it's not no sentience. AI basically.
Right. And so this and the Genetic Dynasty stuff, these are more Dune crossover conversation things. In Dune, there's something called the Butlerian Jihad. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, where AI was ascending and humanity wiped it out and then made it illegal to have thinking machines. And so
can we get that over here?
Yeah, right.
Because
and so they made a lot
of AI in our writing right now.
They made a class of people and who use the spice, and they're called Mentats, and they are actually in the movie and everything, and they're human computers. They train their minds to be computers. But then there's another whole set of concepts that are in the Dune books about drift and complacency and not being innovative or new or fresh. And it just sort of being stuck in the same old. And that was a big theme that was brought up in season one of this show. So,
yeah, cool.
All right. And then we've got some great exposition on Queen Sarath,
I think.
Yeah. And the way that they come in off the ship, and what was that ship that she came down from?
Yeah, that was very cool. I thought I was supposed to recognize it at first. And then I was like, oh, no, that's new.
And then she flies over the rings, which we get some detail on the Trantor's rings.
Yeah. So I guess they've replaced the sky bridge.
Yes.
That's not a thing anymore. They've got rings now.
All right. Gale and Salvor decide to dive to get Salvor's ship from underwater as a hurricane comes to meet them. Salvor can't hold her breath very long, so Gale gives her some of hers, causing her to almost drown. They survive and get the ship running and then rise above the water. Salvor laments their lack of a bond, but Gale tells her to give it time and maybe one day it'll be less weird. Gale calls them the last of the Synaxians. What did you
even
think?
If she can't swim like one?
Yes, that was very cute. I did like that.
Yeah.
What did you?
It's starting to warm up, right?
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's starting to warm up. I'm glad, and it feels. I will say this was some of the better writing between these characters because it felt like a natural sharing a joke is a very easy way to ease into a relationship.
Right.
Where they finally, you know, poking fun at somebody in a way that connects you to them. Is a way of breaking the ice, and Gale finally made a move because so far she's been pretty cold to Salvor, and I don't think intentionally.
Kind of like Joel and Ellie.
Well, I think Joel was trying to push her away,
right?
Whereas actively. I don't think Gale's trying to push Salvor away.
No,
I think
Gale not at
wishes
all.
She could have a good relationship with Salvor, but it's just been weird. It's only been a day, and
yeah, and they're trapped
she just
on
doesn't
this.
Doesn't know how to react. She's in shock.
Flooding planet, you know, yeah. with you know, no yeah. way off, conceivably.
Yeah,
so. As a scene overall, this was my least favorite of the episode. I thought it kind of was a little hokey.
Oh, I thought it was pretty decent.
Compared
to the other Salvor scenes, I like this one better.
Get to the CPU and hard reboot and engine purge. I was just like,
yeah, that was pretty bad.
It was really bad.
All right.
And the whole breath thing. And it was,
yeah.
I get from a plot device, I get it. They need a bonding moment so they can have that moment of humor where Gale can extend, you know, the
like, friendship. Is that how that works? You breathe carbon dioxide air into somebody's mouth and then they just wake up when they were unconscious a second ago.
Is your lip seal properly connected?
Right.
You know, are you actually being able to force into
very
the
strange.
Yeah. I don't know, but
it's almost like she's transferring consciousness. You're right. That was a little silly.
Yeah. And just the whole ship and the flood and the underwater and can we swim down there? I didn't really like, I didn't enjoy it that much. And that was the least of my enjoyment was at the end of season one last year when she's swimming down, she's seeing the beacon flashing light, the whole landing on Synax stuff that just, you know, it was beautiful, but
they got to get remote start in this universe. You know, they need to add that to their clicker.
That's right. I've got it on my phone. I can remote start.
Exactly. There you go.
So, all right. The Empire welcomes the Doyen of the Trade League's Prime Witness of the Cloud Cathedral and Most Excellent Queen Sarath, the First, sole descendant of the Dominion and Provisional Pride to Be.
That's a lot Sarath, of titles.
That was a big mouthful. Sarath's speaker presents, Rue, I believe is her name, presents pigments to the Empire, which wins Brother Dusk. Brother
right
Day,
away. right away. I just got to say, wins him over right away. This guy is the easiest bribe in the entire universe.
In the chair, he was getting very aroused.
So, oh my God, it's blue.
Yes, it's the blue. Brother Day presents a brass model of Trantor, which causes Harith to break out insinuations of inadequacy. Demerazel calls Empire away to tell them that Foundation is probably still out there based on the discovery of a message about the Anacreons. They decide to investigate the situation before taking action against the Foundation.
Yeah, a lot here. This was, I thought, the best dialogue of the episode.
Ooh, was brilliant.
This trading of verbal knives,
yes,
between Brother Day and Sarath.
And Lee Pace was just that eating the scenery on this scene. He was so just, anyway, you were saying.
I was going to say that their people are very like, hey, let's get everyone together. Mm-hmm. All the bureaucrats, this is so true to life too. Like, you have two world leaders meet and all the bureaucrats are like, let's make sure this goes off without a hitch. And then you put two world leaders together and there are hitches, you know?
They're going to play their own games.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And there's going to be weird passive aggressive comments and whatnot. And that's what we got here, right? That was all these passive aggressive comments. When she said nevertheless, I was like, ooh, she's breaking out the nevertheless.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And I loved the choreography of how they reveal her with them twisting away with all the colors. It was really lovely. And I'm super excited to see what this new character is going to bring, because I think it's going to get interesting.
Because it's really fascinating because you have Brothers Dusk and Dawn really worried that she's going to come in and marry into the family and take half the inheritance.
Right.
And yet she's like, I don't know if I want to be with this guy. This guy seems like he's kind of a fake. And just seeing this sort of opposite of what we thought the situation would be, or at least what these characters of the situation would be, occur is a more interesting plot line than it would have been if she was, you know, this figurehead that they're marrying so that the nations could be aligned and whatnot. I really like the way that they presented this whole situation.
And I'm excited to know more about her motivations. Why would she want to marry Empire? That's going to give her a lot of power, but it's also going to constrain her and bind her to that power. So, how's that going to play out? And then this idea of Empire wedding and siring children. And I thought I put a note in it somewhere, but somewhere, maybe it was in an earlier conversation, there was a specific point, I don't remember who it was, about the abnormal genome being present, or that's the abnormal genome, you know, influencing you or something like that.
Hmm. And yeah, so I don't remember if there was. I'm sure there was at some point.
Yeah, it's in the notes. I thought I put a note in it. Anyway, so that this day has decided that children and expanding the genetic pool is a good idea is really radical, right? If he's the 117th?
I think it was just the 17th. Maybe I'm wrong. No, it can't be. That can't be. I don't know. Maybe it is the 117th.
I do not. I know they told us, and I just didn't make a note of it. So apologies for that. So maybe somebody write in.
I won't apologize.
Never apologize.
Never. We are Empire.
There have been rumors of an alliance at the edge of the galaxy, led by magicians who glow in the darkness and fly unaided through the air, and whom weapons cannot touch. So the rumors. This is all part of the psychohistory mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
That these weird rumors are swirling around and causing people to not understand what's happening out on the outer rim.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So what do you think about this idea of they're going to watch the Foundation and then maybe decide later if they want to do something? Is this the right call? Because right now they could land a sneak attack and I think they could win. If they land a sneak attack right now, I think they could wipe out the Foundation right away.
I don't think it's ever bad strategy to assess the strength of a potential opponent. So I don't think it would cost them that much time or effort to get some eyes and ears out there.
But
do
they have that time?
They do not. And now, right, you know, and having this impending, you know, having the heir, the descendant of the Dominion, right?
Mm-hmm.
The prime witness to the Cloud Cathedral right on your doorstep. And she's not somebody who's a fool.
Yeah.
This woman is not a fool. And she has come with an agenda. And that is on your doorstep. And now you're learning that the foundation is not dead.
Right.
You've got crisis on your hands here, Empire.
And we know that this is not something like the Star Wars universe where you can go into hyperspace and get there in a few minutes. This is, it takes 138 years to get between two planets at some right. point. This is not something where you can quickly get spies back and forth to
Terminus. So it may be safe to jump in and arrive in the orbit of, say, our moon, but it's still going to take you a couple of weeks to then transit at sublight the distance from mm-hmm. the moon to the Earth, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
So the question is, do you send the army with the spies or not?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's their options.
Yeah, I like that idea. Send an army out, get it ready, and then send in some spies just a little bit ahead of that, and so that you have real time intel.
And let's be clear, this is not a moral debate here. It's clearly immoral to go like kill all a bunch of people. But I'm talking about from the stance of I'm Brother Day. I'm trying to maintain power. I'm trying to maintain the dynasty. What's the right choice? Do I send the army or not?
Well, John, get your house in order, brother.
Yeah,
that was.
I did like that line a lot.
Ooh, that was.
I liked
so
that line a lot.
Yeah, and what's his name here? Who is Brother Dust? Terrence Mann, is that his name?
Yeah,
yeah. Great, great, great acting by all three of the days, the brothers.
Yeah, and again, very different performance
mm-hmm.
from the first two. The first Brother Dust was extremely calm, kind of bumbling, like he falls off the ladder and whatnot, and. The second Brother Dusk is the hot-headed one that was originally Brother Day in the first episode. And he kept that hot-headedness through that character.
So good.
This one is sort of the wise old man that is trying to give advice.
Yes. Yes.
They're all three different characters. They're doing a really great job. And the same thing I'll compliment Dawn to. Let's not leave him out. Like I said, having an opposite attitude of this kid, this teenager who just wants young love and wants to change things, and
he was
afraid.
So mewing and pathetic in season
right.
one,
right? And then this one is much more confident, much mm-hmm. more sure of himself,
yes, very,
and
much.
Ready to tell Day that he's wrong,
right?
Love
and
it.
Hold his position and not be cowed by him,
right? Right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, code my neurons. I don't care.
So, yeah, super, super good stuff. I really hope the official podcast is back, and I would hope to hear some Lee Pace and Terrence Mann and Cassian Bilton interviews at some point. That would be a really
Very
fun
cool.
insight
yeah.
to hear their process. All right. In the Prime Radiant, Seldon determines that his companion is not Yana or Kale, but instead the Prime Radiant itself, as a combination of the different creators. The Prime Radiant says that it has a vested interest in humanity, in humanity's destiny, which worries Seldon. It tells Harry it's time to go and that it's trying to help Harry knit his mind back together. Harry visualizes the dimensions flattening and unfolding and is able to open a door. The Prime Radiant promises to explain more if it can meet her on Una's world.
Yeah, who is Una? Where is her world? A lot going on here.
Big question. Big open question.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, if I picked it up on the closed captioning, I don't. Is that how you figured it out?
Yes, I could not understand her. I had to turn on. I mean, I always watch with subtitles because I don't know. Especially in the summer when the AC is running, you're not going to hear what they're saying.
I usually do it on my second watch so that, you know, when I'm taking my notes, I can pick mm-hmm. up these details and stuff. But yeah.
No, I don't hear without subtitles.
Interesting deviation that they're making the Prime Radiant sentient. I don't think that that's in the books.
Okay. I'll let you know next week when I finish them.
I'm sure. You'll be an expert before long. Your work was always incomplete. Perhaps I am its completion.
But who completed it?
Itself?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What if she knows about the robot wars and is like, oh, well, AI is coming back, baby.
Does it have Wi-Fi? What's its Bluetooth range? How is it sucking down all the data?
Well, it has all of history.
Yeah. Right? So it's able to be predictive.
Yeah. So it knows about the robot wars. It knows what happened to AI last time. Maybe it's got a different plan.
Isn't it interesting that the current generation of AI we have right now are predictive models, right? The open chat, GPT stuff, that's just predictive modeling.
Yeah.
It's not true AI, but will it become sentient after a certain point? Is that right? Are they saying that in this show? I don't know. That's a good question.
It sure is.
You'll appreciate it down to your bones. That was a really weird line.
Especially because he doesn't have bones.
Exactly. So what does that mean? And it made me think of The Matrix when I forget her name, what her character's name is in the, you know, she's making cookies, you know, from balls to bones or something. She says like that. Like,
but wasn't the vault on Terminus the casket?
It was. You are correct.
So his bones are there.
Interesting. So is Una's world another word for Terminus?
Who knows?
Don't know. So yeah. I don't know. Let's hear your fan theories.
It'd be pretty easy for him to meet her on Terminus since he's already there.
That conscious, right? Two different consciousnesses. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah. Again, I'm looking forward to the war of Harry Seldon's.
Yeah, that's going to be very cool. And with Empire in the mix too.
Yeah. You know, but from the moment that, and this is something, again, I didn't get to cover season one, so I'm going to talk about certain things here. I was a little suspicious of Harry from the beginning. He seemed like he had it too much together. And he was very deceptive with Gale right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always suspected that perhaps he could become a villain.
Interesting.
I'm not sure. I don't think we're there yet. I think he's still a gray character. I don't think he's a good guy either. I think he's a gray character. But he's a much more interesting character than I think the first episode would have made me think. I think I had messaged you after I watched whatever episode he gets killed in. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, man, I'm going to miss Jared Harris. I mean, he was such a core to the show, it felt like. Where is he?
And here he is.
And then, yeah, he's back. A few episodes later, I went, oh, okay. They brought him back. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. And well done showrunners for being able to keep a central character like this as an active component. So
yeah, and like I said, they keep people around in a very creative way. You know, they have two people in cryo, they have the clones, they have the robot, they got the digital consciousness. I mean, it's really creative the way that they bring all these characters into the future and don't make it feel forced.
And I believe all the math is going to line up too about sublight travel and relativistic distances and ages and all that kind of stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I think they go to that length in this show.
Nice.
So, all right. Salvor asks Gale to free Harry to help them find the fault in the ship that is keeping them from taking off in front of the storm. But Gale refuses because of their bad parting. Harry appears spontaneously and he looks like he's out for Gale's blood. It's time you and I had a reckoning.
He screams her name, Gale Dornick.
Yeah,
it's almost like Harry Potter in when Dumbledore is shouting at Harry in the fourth movie, Harry Potter, you know, the just shouting. Love it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's looking very upset. So yes, we're going to see.
I would say so.
But now we have three fates pushed together and a big question of will they, won't they? Will Harry help them get off the planet in front of this impending storm? And can they work it out in a quick enough time frame? So you've got Harry who's mad at Gale and Salvor with a tenuous relationship, and Salvor who has a worshipy, hero-y view of Harry. So you've got this very interesting triangle, and are they going to be able to work it out in time?
Yeah. Well, I think Harry will at least help pilot the ship because he doesn't want to die either.
World.
Yeah, he does not want to die either, but I don't think they're going where Gale wants to go.
But he's not right in the head, so.
Yeah, but I think he's right enough to have a little bit of survival instinct.
Okay. All right. He was right enough to understand a lot of what happened when he was inside the Prime Radiant for sure.
Right. So I think he's going to get them off planet at least.
Okay. Fingers crossed. All right. Well, if you've got theories on that, write into us at empire@thelorehounds.com. Hop over to our Discord server, link in the show notes below. We've got a channel all set up for Foundation, and folks are already talking about stuff. Or leave us a voicemail. Go to our website, use the contact form, or leave us a voicemail. John, I've got a few open questions that I'm starting to track just quickly, and I'll hit these at the beginning of next episode. What was Seldon's father doing with the sand shapes?
Shadow puppets. Move on.
Yeah. What about Day's aura? Who messed with it and why?
Demerzel, move on. I'm going to answer all these rapid fire.
That's because we were doing these rapid fire questions with Alicia on this side.
I know, and now it's in my head.
Morning. Yeah.
Keep going.
Will we learn more about blind angels and psycho encryption?
No, move on.
Gale's vision of fire and silhouette. What's going on with that?
A lot.
What is the prime radius is consciousness? Is it and truly AI that generated itself?
It's Harry, Kale, and Yana seasoned with Gale. Go.
The rings around Trantor. Are we going to get to see more? What are they used for?
It's a roller coaster. Go.
And where or what is Una's world?
Let's go with Terminus. All right. That's it. We've solved the season.
Well done. Good job. Write in if you want to take issue with any of John's rapid fire answers. John, as we do with every podcast, we like to thank our Patreon subscribers and especially our lore masters who are our top tiers. Would you like to give them all a shout out, please?
Would love to. Here they are: Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Lavinia T, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Joyce E, Andrew B, and Kwang Yu, recently upgraded to Lore Master. And I know we've just activated annual billing and people are excited for it and they are joining us in that. So yeah, if you want a little discount and you want to support us for the year, that's available now.
And you can roll over your existing membership without a problem. I think you just go on the website and there's on your membership, there's some way you can just click a button and do that. And that should make it easier for you for billing and whatnot. Another big thing. Thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. We are sending you a gift. We're going to send you a cool sticker to celebrate.
I've seen the mocks. I've seen 1 year
anniversary. Anyone who is a subscriber at the end of July, doesn't matter. You could subscribe on the last day at 11:59 p.m. and you will still get one of these stickers. I'm going to send them in the mail, and they are just a way for John and I to express our profound and deep gratitude for all the support we've had for this last year of our podcasting foray, our entrance into this world of talking about TV and movies and books and all kinds of stuff. So again, thank you to everyone.
Yeah.
John, do you want to update folks on what Alicia is up to? Speaking of Alicia,
we just were on her podcast and we had a good time. It was a game show format for her season wrap up. It was very funny.
Yeah,
it was very good. It was a really good time. Even if you didn't watch Foundation, Silo, I would still listen to it because I think we had a great time. We're just chatting. She's got sound effects. She had a soundboard going for it. And so do that. She also just launched a Patreon for her podcast to do a book club. So always, if you want to support her, it's just another button away. But she's going on to do a book club about the Silo series. And she just interviewed Hugh Howey for it, too.
Yes.
So as Hugh Howey wrote the Silo books, if you didn't know. And that was a good interview. I listened to it. He's given a lot of answers away. So check that out. She got most of it on the public feed. I think part of it on the private feed.
And then I think they're also going to fire up a Dune. They're going to talk about the Dune book and the four different visual adaptations that were done.
Yes, yes.
So,
and then speaking of Dune, we were just on Maester Anthony and Steve's podcast, also part of the Lorehounds Network, which is Properly Howard Film Reviews. We just reviewed Dune 2021 with them. We had a lot of laughs, a lot of fun. We talked about Willy Wonka for a minute, which is unexpected, but it happened. thanks to Timothée Chalamet. And I think that'll come out sometime in August. They're starting a new season where they're going to be covering a lot of remakes, and I think that's going to be a great time.
August 21st, in fact.
Nice. Yeah. So you can find out if that film is better, worse, or properly a Ron Howard movie in quality.
Yeah. They're also doing White Men Can't Jump, which should be out August 14th, and August 28th, RoboCop 2014. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah. And then they got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 7 or 8 more after that. So we'll keep you updated on those titles as they come.
We've got a lot of stuff coming up too, David.
Yes, we just did one shot on The Bear, which was an amazing show.
Yes.
Speaking of Anthony, he and I did Asteroid City. That should also be in your feeds if you want to check those two out. This new one-shot format allows us to do one-off podcasts on any particular topic, and we can pull in different co-hosts and stuff like that. You guys did Mrs. Davis.
We weren't allowed to do it before that.
No, we weren't. It was physically and morally impossible. Attack of the Clones, John.
We had a great time watching it. We just did a live watch. Yeah. You, me, and Duve. We held down the fort.
That's right. And we'll have that podcast out later this month. You and Brandon are doing a Lorehounds play.
We recorded it already. Fallen Order? That should be out pretty soon, actually. I think that's coming out this week.
Jedi Fallen Order, right?
Jedi Fallen Order. It's a canon video game in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And it stars, speaking of The Bear, all the Shameless kids are in all our content right now. You got one Shameless kid running The Bear. You got another Shameless kid, the red-haired one. I can never remember his name. But he is the lead in Jedi Fallen Order. You know, motion capture, so it's actually his likeness in the video game. We had a great time talking about it, and it is a cool story. It's got a very Rogue One scene towards the end that I think you will like to hear about, David.
Okay.
So, yeah, check that out.
Speaking of more Star Wars, we have Ahsoka coming up, and we're going to do a 4-part prep podcast so that if you're not so familiar with the Ahsoka storyline and character, we're going to get you ready for that live action show, which looks dope.
Disney heard about what we're doing and they've released a playlist of Ahsoka background.
Does it comport with yours?
It's basically the same.
Okay.
It's nice. So close to what I put. And I'm both proud and offended.
As well you should be. If we had been on our content game, we would have gotten out before them.
I know. Bob Iger, really. I'm a big fan of the Lorehounds podcast.
Coming for you. Kathleen Kennedy's coming for you.
I know.
She's got your number. Book Nook for the Shore with Marilyn Arpaquila. We've got part 2 coming up. We've got a Silmarillion story that also just happens to have Marilyn as our guest on that. And that's going to be The Flight of the Noldor. Is that right, John?
We're doing 2 chapters.
Okay.
We're doing that one and the next one. So break out your Silmarillion because we got it going on. If you want to listen to the Silmarillion, do you know who just released their reading of the Silmarillion?
I do not know.
Andy Serkis.
Oh, no way.
Has now released his reading of the Silmarillion.
Interesting.
You can get that wherever.
In Gollum voice, the entire thing in Gollum voice.
He actually has a really great, I mean, you know this from Andor. He has a great, rich, deep voice.
He does.
As well. Yeah. And he does a really great job doing all the voices. You could tell how much he loves.
I am Kino Roy.
Yeah. He just loves that material.
That's awesome.
Lord of the Rings. And it's
very cool.
It's really nice to hear. But yeah, I did get the audiobook because I wanted to hear his voice in it. And I mean, look, I'm a super fan of this stuff. And I mean, I even just launched my solo series on the Patreon, Shire Aside.
Patreon exclusive.
I already outlined the second episode. I got to record it, but that'll drop again soon.
Very cool. Jean and Alicia and I are wrapping up our coverage of Secret Invasion. We've got 2 episodes to go on that. We're actually having a good time. The show at some levels is a bit rough cut, but the deeper level issues that they're dealing with, that the characters are dealing with, and what it's saying about some stuff in our modern society is really fascinating. And we've gotten into some very long, interesting conversations about what the show is saying. And I encourage you, if you're a fan of any of that stuff, give us a listen there.
You can have a bad show with a great conversation and you will have a great time.
Exactly. Hey, just jump in to listen to Alicia and Jean and I have a good time talking about stuff. So, and I think we're going to try, it may end up being in August, but we're going to try and do Barbenheimer.
I'm excited.
John, are you going to see Barbie? You're just going to see Barbie. Awesome.
I'm just going to see Barbie. I'm going to be on Team Barbie.
Okay. I think I'm going to be Team Oppenheimer.
Okay.
And I know Alicia is doing the double feature. We got to see what Marilyn and Jean and Brandon, anybody else that we can get from the Lorehounds crew to join us. Because I think we're going to get a...
Should I record a cover of Barbie Girl?
Yes, you should. You should.
All right. All right. Yeah. I'll think about it.
That'll be awesome. So that is a lot, John. July is ramping back up. We had a little content desert there for a while, but we are in full swing because
I like how you call it a content desert when we do like 15 podcasts
in a month.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the input is not much, but the output did not feel like it.
We did not waver in our commitment.
Yeah.
But we're rolling in. We've got Foundation. We've got Ahsoka. And then we've got, good Lord, Wheel of Time. We're going to be triple podcasting at one
point. I am
triple
excited blessings for Wheel of Time.
Triple
I'm
blessings
really excited.
To you. Yeah.
Triple
are you,
blessings,
are,
yeah. That was good.
Are you hearing any good stuff about Wheel of Time season two?
I mean, the trailer looks really good. There is a shot of Matt with a staff.
Uh-huh.
That has me and all the other book readers so hyped. You have no idea how hyped we are. And if they screw this up, I'm stopping coverage. That's where I'm at. It's that cool of a scene. If they screw it up, I'm not really going to stop coverage, but I'm going to complain a lot about it. I'm going to complain a lot about it on air. So let's hope they don't, because I don't want to do that.
Awesome. Well, John, thanks for jumping in on Foundation. I'm glad we've got a nice, juicy, meaty show to cover.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about because it's just so dense.
And there's going to be a lot more. I mean, we're only getting started, I think. So
yeah,
it's very cool. Awesome. All right. So we'll see you on the next episode, whatever it may be.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.